Pick Six Podcast Wednesday edition. That would normally mean film room, but we're on the dreaded NFL bye. We got a week before the Super Bowl begins, so we'll bring on Andy Benoit and we'll talk about Peyton Manning, the new Raiders head coach. Not Peyton Manning, but Dennis Allen, the new Raiders head coach. What we should do with Billy Cundiff, whether Baltimore's window is slammed shut. I don't think it is. Alex Smith is a possible free agent, and then we'll probably end up debating 2007 versus 2011 and whether or not Eli is better than Peyton. Andy, what do you think about Jim Irsay tweeting on Tuesday night that he has, quote, no regrets, and that, quote, contrary to rumors, end quote, he is not pissed about giving Peyton Manning $26 million to wear a headset in 2011?
I think with Jim Irsay tweeting, I believe what he tweets, but I mean, what are we going to read into that?
A large block of salt is what you're saying?
Yes. I mean, not because he's being deceptive, what's he saying though? Okay, I'm glad he's not pissed. That's not relevant now. I mean, it's a sunk cost. And so I bet he's not happy enough about paying Manning to do nothing to do it again. I bet he wouldn't. I bet he's not willing to do that.
Well, here's two things that are interesting to me. One, there is no rumor that he's pissed. I mean, maybe it's an assumption, but there's no report or
– Right, right. He started the rumor by saying he's not.
Yeah. Contrary to the rumors you might be hearing, Jim, which would lead one to believe that he is upset about it. I find it fascinating that if the Colts had franchised Manning, which would have been an expensive and expensive endeavor and a nightmare for public relations, because they would have had to, they would have been basically saying, we're not committed long-term enough. We want you to play 1 year, on this franchise tag. If they'd done that, there wouldn't be this huge decision coming up on March 8th.
Well, kind of. I mean, they'd have the same decision to make. And that, would we franchise him again, or are they going to re-sign Manning?
Right, right, right. But, I mean, they could say, all right, Peyton, we would like to sign you to a deal. We'll offer you something less than $28 million for the first year.
Right, right, yeah. No, they bit off a lot more than anyone could have imagined trying to chew when they paid him like that. And so, obviously, they didn't know the severity of the neck injury. I'm amazed at this discussion. We've talked about this already. This will be the story of 2012.
Oh, absolutely. And it's not helping them that the Super Bowl is being played in Indy. I mean, Peyton is he's hosting the DirecTV Celebrity Beach Bowl.
Hosting that. Remember last year we were going to that and we all forgot.
Yeah, because it's on Saturday. So
right.
It's like,
well, and last year it wasn't very beachy out in Dallas. In fact, where are they playing? I'm sure that can't be outdoors in Indiana.
They were playing on the sands of the Dallas streets.
The sanded icy. Yeah, the idiots.
Yeah. I think it's indoors. I mean, but this is Peyton's town. You know, I mean, he can't disappear for the next week. The next 2 weeks. I mean, he will have to be around. I mean, he has too many endorsements to not show up and to do events. And look, he's just going to repeat the. I think that's probably why he gave that interview to Bob Kravitz. Get the first one out of the way. Pull the Band-Aid. I mean, I'm sure Kravitz is they're tight. I mean, he's covered him for a long time. But
right, right.
But I think that pull the Band-Aid and then go into it with the mindset that. All these people are going to ask me these questions about my future, and I'm going to say, I don't know. It's out of my hands. I love Indianapolis.
Well, he said a lot to Kravitz already. I mean, he can maybe do what Belichick did, which I loved, by the way. The other day, someone asked him about David Tyree's catch, and he said, that was a long time ago. There are plenty of quotes in the old transcripts,
right.
The transcribed interviews from after that game that I made. You can go check then, and that's a great answer because obviously – I mean, what's he going to say about the catch? And so maybe Manning did the – I don't think he did. I'm being a little facetious. But maybe he did the interview so he could say, go check Kravitz's article.
He bought 10,000 copies of the Indy Star. And he's just
he'll just hand them out to everybody.
Here you go, sir.
I mean, it's a different spot, obviously. I mean, it's a difficult spot as well. But I think it's – I mean, it's overblown. We get these Manning articles, and he gives this interview. I mean, he just did one with Judy Batista in the New York Times, and that gets its own news wave now. And you look at what they say, and we're breaking down everything he says and trying to read into it and thinking what he really means. And in fact, we don't know. I mean, we're looking at this stuff in print. We're not hearing it firsthand. Who knows what he really means if he's saying what he really means, because it doesn't really do him a whole lot of good to be totally honest if there's so much money on the line. And so it's going to be a lot of gossipy stuff, which is fine. I mean, that's fun. But I think you can take anything going on with Manning now and look at it from any direction and any angle and make it sound plausible. And you can say this means that, that means this. If anything's on the table right now.
Here's what I think. I think that everybody knows he's gone. I think Peyton knows he's gone. I think that Jim Irsay knows that fiscally he cannot make a $28 million investment for a quarterback who's not guaranteed to be healthy on a team that won't be very good. I mean, it's not like this Colts team, even with Peyton, is going to be very good unless they re-sign Reggie. You know, I mean, they're just – I mean, even at Peyton at MVP form, this is a – I mean, aren't they maxing out at 10 wins next year?
It seems like it. It seems like if there were ever a chance to get rid of a guy like Peyton Manning, and that seems just weird phrasing it like that, but this would be it. And this might be it for Manning in general. I think he'll keep playing, but a lot of people –
Who are you, Rob Lowe?
A lot of people keep thinking that, well, let's the Jets should go sign him. And, yeah, that's an upgrade over Mark Sanchez, and Manning's an upgrade over whoever Washington would trot out at quarterback and probably Miami as well. But the idea that you just plug in Peyton Manning and another team is very misguided. I mean, Manning is also good because of the system and organization he's with. He's been in the same system with essentially the same type of personnel and obviously the same surroundings his entire career, and that's been one of his greatest advantages. I mean, that's same with his brother and Kevin Gilbride, in fact. And so he's not a mobile guy. He's not a very cerebral guy even. He's very mechanized. I mean, he does a lot of things off routine, and he's gotten great, maybe greater than anybody ever, within the routine he has in Indy. But that doesn't just transfer to another team. He's more valuable as a Colt than he is anywhere else.
Well, yeah, and look, I mean, he's had this group of offensive the offensive linemen, the wide receivers, the tight ends, the running backs, all of these guys grow up in a system that is specifically tailored to Peyton Manning.
Exactly. I mean,
they learned how to work under Manning. You know, when somebody like Blair White has to step in, yeah, he might look like he doesn't know the routes precisely, and maybe he doesn't, and maybe he's not on the same page as Manning, but he's a lot closer to on the same page as Peyton Manning than someone like Santonio Holmes.
I was thinking that example exactly. And so the question is, if Manning becomes a, let's just say hypothetically, if he becomes a Jet, how much does Manning have to change to tailor himself to the offense, or how much do you try to tailor the rest of the offense and the other 10 guys plus all the backups to Manning? And is there enough time to do it all and get it ready for a regular season?
Well, I think a lot has to do with what sort of power offensive power structures in place. You know, if you go somewhere with let's say the Redskins are a team that's being thrown out. I know Mike Freeman said his best guess is that he goes to the Redskins. I think it's certainly plausible. Are Mike Shanahan and Kyle Shanahan, who are notoriously proud, let's say proud, yep, of their offensive schemes, are they going to tailor it to Manning? I would guess that they're going to want to put Manning in their schemes and let him run something sort of designed, you know, on their wavelength. Whereas if you go to the Jets and you have a defensive minded head coach and a running game minded offensive coordinator, Tony Sperano, maybe they give Manning a little more freedom in the passing game.
Both are terrible fits when you just when you think about it. I mean, Shanahan's system where there's bootlegs and rollouts and anything else. I mean, Manning would be an average player in that system. I mean, he'd be a middle tier quarterback. That is so
Robert,
far from
Robert,
his stock.
Robert Griffin III might be better next year in that
You'd
system
be better,
than
yeah.
Manning.
You'd be better off. And same with Manning handing the ball off again and again, and it's not involved. I mean, maybe they could set up some play action stuff there, but neither one of them seem like they fit. I mean, where Manning would be best, and it will never happen, Detroit. I could see him stepping in there where it's a static offense, you have good receivers, no one's moving around, so you get good looks at the defense, and you're in the shotgun most of the game, and it's all about throwing from the pocket.
I mean, a serious question, is he an upgrade over Matthew Stafford? Next year? I don't know.
I don't know. I mean,
5,000 yards.
Right, right. And you were talking, obviously, it's not long term. That's why it'll never happen. Right. But if it were just one season, I think I would stick with Matthew Stafford.
Yeah. Wow. That's
given that Stafford's been in the system before. If we're starting everything from scratch and it's just one guy on a blank slate, I'd probably take Manning for 1 year still. But
I agree. What about the Ravens?
Taking Manning?
Yeah, I mean, Joe Flacco is got one more year left in his contract. I'm pretty sure they could cut him or, you know, just bench him, stick him on the bench. I mean, with limited financial repercussions, would Manning put the Ravens over top?
First of all, you'd lose Joe Flacco's shoulder because he's already got such an enormous chip on it that if you did something like that to him, I mean, he'd get defensive, and the chip would just obliterate the rest of his shoulder.
Joe Flacco would take $20 next year to play on the Browns if the Ravens cut him just to throw at the Ravens.
And then he would every week he would lecture the Browns media about his style of play versus Manning's. We both agree this won't happen, right? So you're just bringing up the premise or the idea of it.
Well, I mean, why can't it?
Well, because Flacco is a guy you want to build around. So to cut, you'd be cutting ties with him for probably 1 to 2 good seasons with Manning.
I mean, I'm just saying. I mean,
Flacco's. How about this? I like the discussion because it's interesting. I mean, it goes in a lot of directions. How would the fans of Baltimore react to that? Do you think they would like that? And I'm asking, I don't know.
I think they would love it. They hate Flacco there. They're always ripping on Flacco. I go on Baltimore radio twice a week on the Bob and Rob show on 105.7 The Fan, and they hate Flacco. Like if you defend Flacco in that town, it's like being Prisco in Jacksonville and talking about TV.
Well, then
it's good for ratings. Is what I'm saying.
Well, then I guess I would be glad to do that. I think Flacco's a fine quarterback. I think he's closer to the average than good right now, but especially after his AFC Championship performance, and we've seen him win other games down the stretch. He has one of the best arms in the league. Flacco has a better arm than Peyton Manning right now. In fact, than Peyton Manning ever had.
All right,
pure arm.
Okay.
You know, Peyton Manning has a better everything else.
Right.
But I wouldn't.
All right,
I wouldn't get rid of Flacco for Manning. I wouldn't get rid of Flacco for just about for many guys right now.
All right, I'm scrolling through the rest of the teams that could potentially make sense. Seems like the 49ers are set for Alex Smith. I mean, although Manning, you know,
that's a more plausible. I mean, 10,000. That one guy could. I mean, maybe that one could happen. Alex Smith is not under contract.
No.
Would
you rather? And remember, I threw out the report. Now is that they're going to offer him 3 years between $8 and $11 million. So I was pretty spot on. What did I say? 3 years, $30 million. I think last time we talked.
You probably were talking with Ryan Wilson. I don't recall.
I don't know. Don't know Ryan Wilson. I threw out three. Yeah, maybe it was. I threw out 3 years, $30 million is what they should pay Alex Smith if they want to sign him, or should offer. I don't know if he would take it.
I would front load that deal.
Sure. Sure. And maybe incentivize it too. If Alex Smith will take that.
Yeah, the problem with that is they do such a run. I mean, how would you – the incentives would be tough to obtain. They do such a run-oriented offense. They minimize him.
Yeah, but you could do interceptions, Turner. I mean, I don't know. I mean, look, I don't think Alex Smith is sweating money. He wants to enjoy his time as an NFL player right now. I mean, he got paid for the full length of his rookie deal.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, he's got plenty of money. He wasn't happy until this year, so that I think that's good for him. The Arizona Cardinals are
as a Manning destination.
Yeah.
They'd be cutting bait with Kevin Cobb. They might have to do that anyway, though.
Well, the interesting thing about this, and is that Manning's bonus is due on March 8th. The Cardinals have an option on Kevin Cobb that's due on March 17th. So they can dump Kevin Cobb. Obviously, they will have paid him last year like the Colts paid Manning. But if the Colts dump Manning, the Cardinals will have 9 days to engage in discussions, one would presume pretty privately, and have Larry Fitzgerald call Peyton Manning 5 times a day and tell him to come to Arizona, in which they could then sign Manning and make a decision to dump Cobb if they wanted to go that route.
And that could be one because of Fitzgerald's unique talent and his intelligence. That could be one where you could learn the offense in either direction very quickly. I mean, I could see a veteran. We already saw Kurt Warner do it, but I could see another veteran quarterback quickly building chemistry with a guy like Fitzgerald.
Sure.
I mean, he's got superstar talent and the experience. He's not just like Calvin Johnson, who's still learning the game. Fitzgerald's peaking now in a good way. So yeah, I mean, that I think the Cardinals would be the NFC West favorites if they got Manning.
Next year. Oh yeah, absolutely. And 2 points on the Cardinals. One, Charlie Casserly reported on the NFL Today. He didn't report that the Cardinals were interested, but he said he threw out the card. He's the first person to throw out the Cardinals as a possible landing spot for Peyton Manning. And so I wrote it up, put a video in it, tweeted it out, and like 10 minutes later, it gets retweeted by Larry Fitzgerald's brother.
What is up with the Fitzgerald family?
I know.
Saying all, I mean, the brother did that before too. I mean, he's gotten involved with that stuff, and then
he took the link and tweeted it at Kent Summers.
Yeah, so he told everybody. Nice, good pickup for you there.
Yeah.
Larry Fitzgerald Sr., who I'm trying to figure out. I mean, I guess I need to read his work.
He's a long time Minnesota beat
right, writer. But he's always at the Cardinal games.
Yeah.
Understandably so, but is he still is he writing about Cardinal games now all the time? I'm always surprised to see him. I met him in a press box once and I didn't recognize him.
Oh yeah, I remember.
And I asked him why he had a ring, because he's wearing his son's championship ring or something. And for some reason I thought it was a Panther ring too. It looked so. I said, "Oh, were you with the 2003 Panthers?" Or it was a dumb question, and it was an empty response from him, obviously. I mean, it's I'm never going to get to talk to him again if he remembers me. And I'm lucky for me, he'll never remember me, because I made such a non-impression on him. That was also at a Cardinals press box.
Interesting.
So he wasn't covering the Vikings that day.
Hmm. Maybe he watches Vikings games from the Cardinals press box.
We were watching Saints and Dolphins that time.
Yeah, that's weird. Okay, here's the other point I got about the Cardinals, is that everybody is – and this is kind of like the 2000 – yeah, it's like everybody's like, oh, 2011, just like 2007. People mm-hmm. are like, oh, Peyton Manning, just like Kurt Warner. Well, not precisely, because – Kurt Warner was coming off a year where he didn't have a great season with the Giants. He was a free agent, and I believe that he signed a 1-year, $4 million deal with the Cardinals. It's not like they were like, we're getting Kurt Warner, Super Bowl MVP, you know, let's
mm-hmm. –
he later – you know, he was the backup when he came in to Matt Leinart. Right?
I mean, seems right. I mean, I'm sure he was at some point.
He got bent. I mean, he got sat a couple times. Denny Green sat him for Matt Leinart. After he started the season poorly, and then, you know, Warner ended up coming on hot later and signing a bigger deal with the Cardinals. I think it's interesting that people are just like, oh, well, you know, Kurt Warner came to Arizona and was amazing immediately, which is not the case at all.
Right. I mean, yeah, Ken Whisenhunt came to Arizona. I mean, that's what worked. They got Warner in the right system. And Manning would work in Whisenhunt's system. There'd be more fanfare. There'd be expectations, which there
more
weren't
money.
With Warner. So it's a bigger commitment by the Cardinals organization. I don't know how much the fanfare expectations, even the money, matters once you start playing the games. But it'd be an interesting case. It sounds like, because we've talked this long about it, and other people clearly have too, it sounds like what you said earlier, we all seem to do have that sense that Manning is done in Indy. So maybe my point of, well, we don't know which way this will go, maybe that's wrong. Maybe we do know it's going to go and Manning wearing other colors besides blue and white.
And the other team, by the way, that I'll throw out is now I'm thinking I might write an article about what teams could, you know, he could, because there are just some teams where it's like you could eliminate him right now. You know,
like the Ravens
or the no, you can't eliminate the Ravens. You can eliminate the Patriots or the Panthers.
You don't think you can eliminate the Ravens? You really think the Ravens would take Peyton Manning and just get rid of Joe Flacco right now?
No, I don't think they would, but I think that it's one of those situations where you have to have the discussion if it's a possibility, right?
If you're the Ravens, you have the discussion.
I mean, you don't like call Joe Flacco in and say, "Hey, we're thinking, like, sell us on you. We're thinking about going with Peyton." But I mean, if you're like if you're Harbaugh and Ozzie Newsome in the front office, you know, you sit down and say, "Okay, you know, we know that Joe played well in the AFC Championship game. We think that he played." you know, he had a good year, not as good to his standards. First of all right, let's talk about this then. Cam Cameron reportedly not sure about his status for next year. No kidding. I mean, I don't, you know, Chuck Pagano could be gone too if he interviews and does well. I think he's interviewing for the Colts job. I don't know whether he'll get it or not, but that actually could make sense. But to me, if you're the Ravens, you need to get Cam Cameron out of there.
I had some issues with the way Cameron called the games this season, but I think a bigger issue is the way the Ravens receivers played at times. I mean, Greg Cosell made news a few days ago. It spread all over when he said that he's never, and Greg Cosell, executive producer, NFL matchup show, he said he's never seen a group of receivers so bad at beating man coverage. And to me, and that surprises me. I thought they weren't great, but for Greg to say that bad is surprising to me.
But he also said the Ravens' offense looks like something out of the '60s.
Yeah, you're right. He did say that. It's a very simplistic approach. And is that on Cam Cameron, or are they asking? I mean, I've said this season they've asked for more of Joe Flacco, and I think that's true. But if you factor in Greg's analysis, then I think you have to say, yeah, but they've asked more of Flacco athletically. They've put more on his arm and arm strength, but they haven't asked for more of him mentally, which at least not as much as I would have guessed if they're not moving receivers around or their route combinations are as simplistic as Greg says. And if he says it, they are simplistic. So,
right. Well, here's my beef with Cameron is that we have numerous instances where the Ravens offense was incredibly unproductive against a team like the Jaguars or a team like the Seahawks. And in doing so, it was, I mean, like if you were watching the games, you're like, what are you doing? I'm not an offensive coordinator. I can't, you know, design an entire playbook, but I know that when you're not, what they were doing was not good, you know?
Mm-hmm. I do know. I wonder if it has something to do with the fact, I mean, I'm looking at their receivers now, Torrey Smith, David Reed, a second-year guy, fifth-round pick last season's a backup. Lee Evans, who was in and out of the lineup, mostly out of the lineup.
Four catches all year.
Mm-hmm. Tandon Doss, who didn't play much, and then Bolden, and Bolden's, he's a good veteran. But these other guys, I mean, there's no experience there. And so I wonder, because I have a trouble believing what I'm getting at. I don't think Cam Cameron draws up simplistic pass design because that's all he knows. You don't get to the NFL and stick in the league as long as he has if you don't know all the plays or how to do it. So there's a reason he's calling simple plays. Is that because he doesn't trust Joe Flacco or because he knows he doesn't have receivers that, I mean, it's hard to run option routes. And those, it's hard. You can't ask every receiver in the league. They're not all Wes Welker. You can't ask him to read a defense and then pick your route in the middle of a play based on how you read a defense in live action. I mean, Torrey Smith has enough trouble with just mechanically beating good
coverage. Catching the ball.
Yeah, and then catching and tracking the ball. And so I have to believe that the issue in Baltimore really is what it's been for the last 10 years, and that is that they're still green or ungifted at wide receiver. And a good offseason it would certainly do wonders for Torrey Smith, and that might change the whole face of this offense. How much of that's on Cameron and how much of that's on Flacco does someone have to take a fall for this? I would be inclined to say bring them all back. I mean, bottom line is if Lee Evans catches the perfectly thrown ball that Flacco threw him at the end of the game, we're not talking about any of this. We're talking about will Baltimore win the Super Bowl.
Of course, we're also, if Joe Flacco makes those two long throws to Torrey Smith, we might be talking about that too.
Yeah, I mean, you can say that.
I think you're right. There's problems with the wide receivers. You can't run, you can't do what Green Bay does and like run, triple stack on the right side with the receivers you have at Baltimore because, I mean, like, what do you, like, you're trotting out like TJ Houshmandzadeh's corpse or something. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. There's nobody, you know, I mean, Lee Evans, obviously unproductive. You know, he's had injuries, but Torrey Smith, like you said, I mean, he's a burner right now. I think that he's going to turn out to be a really good wide receiver and a good value draft pick where they got him. But right now, he's more of a burner, I think.
I agree. I hope he does it because he does have unique talent. I could also see him being a Dante Stallworth, though. And Stallworth had injury issues and obviously was out of the league for a while.
They actually look alike, too. They got the same.
Yeah, maybe that's why I could think, because I'm used to seeing the dreadlocks coming out of the helmet. Yeah, oh, it's a racist thing. No, I would take either of those guys' talent right away. I mean, no questions sure. asked. And I just hope that Smith can hone his talent. Stallworth, he never quite got a chance to. He was always hurt and he got in trouble. But their style of play is somewhat similar. Remember, Stallworth early in his career as a Saint was that burner guy as well, and he did some big flash plays. You mentioned I know you got to get off Ravens. You mentioned the stack concept, so that is a simple thing that a coordinator could do. And Cosell pointed out that Cameron didn't do bunch concepts and stack concepts to help his guys beat man coverage. And so I think it is the coaching wasn't great in Baltimore either. It's just a matter of if it's worth changing the whole system for.
Before we leave the Ravens, I would give you this on Joe Flacco versus Peyton Manning. Rather than spend whatever it costs to get Peyton Manning and dump Joe Flacco, if I'm the Ravens, I go out inside like Marquise Colston or Vincent Jackson or a physical wide receiver who has more speed than Anquan Boldin at this stage of his career. And then all of a sudden you have a ridiculous wide receiver core because you got the possession guy in Boldin, a burner in the slot in Torrey Smith, two talented tight ends who really haven't quite emerged yet in Dixon and Pitta, and then a premier number one target, which they just don't have right now.
That's a good idea, and there are guys available, and getting someone like that would give you more formation versatility. You can put a guy like Colston, I mean, he's best inside, but the Saints used him outside in the playoffs. You can get away with doing that. By the way, do you bring Billy Cundiff back? We mentioned what do you do with Cundiff. Oh,
yeah, I bring him back. I mean,
I think it's tough. I mean, I know they're supportive of him. I think that adds a lot of just distraction, undue pressure on the season.
Actually, let me take that back. I don't bring him back, and here's why. Not because he missed that kick. He was 1 of 10 for his last kicks past 50 yards. That to me is a bigger, like that whole scoreboard thing, and then you know the sideline thing. They had a chance to call a timeout. Cundiff could have gotten in position to make that kick. What worries me is that at one point they had a 50-yard field goal that they could have gone for. And they had to go for it in a spot nobody wanted to go for it because Cundiff doesn't have the leg to kick it.
And that's interesting because he was one of the better long distance kickers before the season. He had a calf injury this year.
He was the reason that they bumped the touchback back, but you know he led the league in touchbacks last year. He was killing it off the tee.
So he's just and then once it gets in a guy, I mean I don't know. You could say once it gets in a guy's head. You know, it'd be neat if somebody tracked, like if someone were to put together the top 10 kicks that big misses like this, and then to see what happened to the kicker afterwards.
Kickers and closers in baseball are the – it just seems like because there's so much riding on a position that's kind of relegated to the back of the bus, so to speak. Yeah, I mean closers are obviously important. They get paid millions of dollars. But you see random guys step in and close games all the time because you know what I mean? And
yeah, their job's very simplistic too, and so I think it puts more of a thinking element to it.
Right, it's mental because you're coming in. Yeah. You're coming in the last. You know, I mean that's why you look at the great kickers and the great closers aren't so much like superstar, superstars at their position so much as they are just clutch. Like, people remember, like Adam Vinatieri, not even a great kicker, but he made some crucial clutch kicks. And that's
right. He was always a very good kicker who was great or seemingly great in the big moments.
Exactly. So, yeah. Kickers. All right.
they are important too, though.
Of course,
people thought they, you know, just a kicker, but it's no such thing as just a kicker anymore.
All right. So we talked about Alex Smith. What do you think about him? We talked about Peyton Manning in San Francisco is what we really talked about. But what do you think about Alex Smith's future in San Francisco? There's been a lot of chatter the last today's Wednesday, recording on Wednesday, so about 48 hours about Smith's performance. People have I said that he was a winner when I reviewed the games, mainly because I thought that he even though he didn't play that well. You know, I mean, I know our buddy Cosell, Greg Cosell, wrote and I love his blog entries. He's a blogger now. You know that?
Yeah, NFL Films new blog, yes.
Yeah, the NFL Films blog are fantastic. And he pointed out that Smith really made some crucial, they're not mistakes, but they're, He didn't pull the trigger on throws, I think was the exact quote.
Is this based on his film study of the championship game, I assume?
Yeah. He just missed a lot of throws that he could have made. I thought that Smith played okay in that he made, you know, obviously he had the wheel route to Vernon, and then he had the first touchdown pass. Was the first touchdown pass the wheel route or the second one?
That was the first one.
Okay, the first one was a wheel route.
I believe 73-yarder.
Yeah, that's right. But it was a beautiful throw on that, and he made it. I thought that his connection with Vernon Davis is really starting to pick up as the season went along and the playoffs went along. And I think that he had no wide receivers, no help at wide receiver. He made some good plays with his legs, and he was going against a really good defense that's playing at a high level right now in the Giants. So I understand how there's room to rip him and room to question him, but I thought that he solidified his status, you know, as the guy who should be the 49ers quarterback going forward.
Did Greg make mention of the wide receivers? I haven't read. I'll read the thing. I mean, I always read it.
I haven't read the whole thing.
Because I agree. I mean, he didn't get much help at wideout. It's tough to tell on just watching the broadcast. You'd have to go back. I mean, just watching it in the moment. You have to go back and study it and look for that kind of thing. And I have not done that yet. But, I mean, we know that he completed one pass to a wide receiver.
Three yards on a third and five.
Yeah, I mean, So he didn't get a lot of help at wideout. They don't have a lot of wideouts, and people criticize him for that. But keep in mind, at the front of the year, they signed Braylon Edwards, who they thought could be Braylon Edwards, and he just wasn't.
Sure.
Josh Morgan got hurt. I completely forgot about him.
Early on. Yeah.
And a good, solid possession guy. And then Ted Ginn was not available in this game. There's your number three or four guy. So it was attrition.
And I should point out that the specific throw that Greg pointed out early on that in his post early on that Smith didn't pull the trigger on was a deep pass to Michael Crabtree. He just basically missed it. And so then he threw a dump down to Frank Gore that went for no yardage. So the Crabtree, you know, pass could have been a big one. I have to wonder, you know, how much confidence Alex Smith has in Michael Crabtree, though. You know, I mean, like the guy, you know, had a slant for a touchdown against the
Saints.
Yeah, Saints. But he didn't, you know, he dropped a few other balls. I mean, how confident can you be if you're Alex Smith, knowing too that you're in the same position as a Kyle Williams in that your job is to not make big mistakes?
Well, if he doesn't have confidence in Crabtree, there goes your passing game because he didn't have anybody else other than Vernon Davis.
Right.
So. I bring him back next season, and I try to do – I mean, look, they were close. I mean, their formula worked, and it goes against the grain, but it did work. And so I bring him back and give it one more shot. I like the idea of a two-year contract with him, and they have Kaepernick on the sidelines. I guess we don't know what you're getting with him or how good he will be at the NFL level. So I go 2 years with Smith and see if we can try this thing one more time.
Well, and is it Kaepernick or Kaepernick?
Whatever. Kaepernick.
Kaepernick. Thanks, Colin, for your awesome to spell. Just kidding. Easy to spell last name. That was fun at the draft. I think with Kaepernick.
I called him Kaepernickel for the longest time, by the way.
Kaepernickel.
I think
with Kaepernick, his deal, too, is that he coming out, obviously they might wish they hadn't picked him so early, but he was considered kind of a project. You know, you didn't want to start him right away. You know, like with although maybe we said that about Cam Newton too. But
right.
But I mean, I think a 2 or 3 year deal with Alex Smith, and like you said, front load it. And then the Niners need to be another team getting in the market for this. There is an insane market for wide receivers this year.
Well, because that position has become so important in today's
NFL.
No.
But I mean, have you seen the
free agents available?
Yeah,
I haven't seen all of them. Do you have a list or something? I mean, I know Colston's out there.
Yeah, Colston, DeSean Jackson. I'm bringing it up now. Sorry, I should have gotten this up before.
We didn't know it would come up.
Yeah, our buddies at footballsfuture.com. Here's the list of free agent wide receivers. Now, granted, some of them won't make it that far, but Reggie Wayne,
mm-hmm.
Wes Welker. I think he'll end up staying in.
You will. And Reggie Wayne's washed up, by the way.
But I mean, he's still better than Michael Crabtree.
I don't. Maybe. Yeah. I get what you're saying. I'm seeing keeper. I see. I've got the list too here. Keep reading it.
Vincent Jackson,
not washed up. Very good guy. I don't think he gets away though either.
Really?
See,
you have the one issue with Jackson is that he could be facing a big suspension based on his DUI stuff if he gets in trouble. So, see, to me, Vincent Jackson is a guy who will go where he has been so hosed by the timing of his contract for the past few years that I think he'll go to wherever gives him the most money, and I think that ends up being like Jacksonville.
Yeah, I could see that.
He's a surfer. He wants to go somewhere near a beach. Jacksonville is great surfing, so he can go.
Assume San Diego's got some surfing.
Well, yeah, but I mean, like, I don't know that San Diego will be willing to give him the huge. Why not give him the huge deal earlier?
Because of the issue you brought up. But what about franchise tagging him again?
Yeah, that's true. He might not be thrilled about that, but he can guarantee money.
Yeah, he can deal with it.
Yeah, DeSean Jackson,
franchise tag him.
You think so?
Mm-hmm. I'm not giving him a long-term deal.
No, hell no. But there's talk that the Eagles could let him walk, right? And I think he'll throw a huge stink if they franchise tag him. Dwayne,
he said he'd be willing to deal with it. I mean, he's got to have someone eventually telling him you can't do that. You can't be
jackass
2 years in a row.
Terrell Owens, yeah. All right, Dwayne Bowe.
Okay.
Stud. He's a stud.
Okay, I think Kansas City keeps him too, though.
Okay, Marquise Colston. They can't franchise tag him unless they sign Breeze first.
Yeah, that's true. I think he comes back, but I think they lose their guard. I mean, they can't keep everybody in that offense, unfortunately.
Yeah, Knicks, Colson.
Knicks. Yeah.
Steve Johnson. Stevie Johnson.
Brandon. I keep saying they all come back. Maybe I just can't picture these guys in other uniforms is all.
Yeah, I mean, they could definitely go somewhere else. I mean,
this is a loaded list. You're right.
Yeah, too. I mean, like, we're down to, like, number five or six. I mean, like,
Reggie Wayne, guys aren't restricted either.
Yeah, and yeah, exactly. And don't forget that, like, with Stevie Johnson, you can't. I mean, I think the franchise tag is like, is it $8 million for a wide receiver? Is that too low? I think it's like 7.75.
Let's call it. It'll probably be about 9. I mean, someone's going to get a new contract somewhere.
Exactly. So it'll probably prop up. Brandon Lloyd. I would bet everything in my bank account he ends up in New England with Josh McDaniels. Robert Meacham, Mario Manningham, and then Mike Wallace is restricted. And then there's also, if you want to, you know, Jerome Simpson.
They have these guys listed as, like, who's part of the rest. Yeah. Jerome Simpson's not just one of the rest guys.
Well, he's going to jail. That's the problem.
He's one of the, then I guess he'll re-sign with Cincinnati in that case.
Pierre Garçon's out there. I mean, he shouldn't be the rest. Yeah, I mean, but like.
Right. I mean, there's good.
The point being is that this is a stacked wide receiver list.
It is, yeah. Yeah, someone can get these guys. You're right. JerMichael Finley's available as a tight end, too.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. Tony Gonzo signed a deal, so he's not on there. But, I mean, yeah, my point is that some of these guys will hit the open market, and they'll make a lot of money. And you got to remember, like, you talk about, you know, we talk about how to apply the franchise tag with somebody like Dwayne Bowe. I mean, I have to go back and look at who else they got a franchise tag. But, I mean, you can't just slap it on a wide receiver. There are lots of – wide receiver is a position that, you know, we see new people emerge all the time, you know?
So you think it's not necessarily worth the money to do that then? What are you saying there?
Yeah. I'm saying that, like, I would rather use my franchise tag on a stud defensive player or a stud lineman than to use it on a stud wide receiver.
I got you. I think it depends on your situation. Like, to go with the Bowe example, because what we do know is teams that are weak at wide receiver, maybe you don't need a superstar receiver to be a decent offense. I mean, San Francisco survived this year. New England, I guess they have Welker, but they, you know, there are other ways to do it. But if you don't have at least adequate wide receivers or good receivers, you have no chance. Look at Jacksonville, St. Louis before they got Brandon Lloyd, Denver when they were trying to run a regular offense with Orton and those wideouts. I mean, you have to have somebody at least a little bit dynamic. So you can't. The Chiefs, I think, would be really hurting if they lost Bowe and they were relying on Baldwin and Breston to be their guys.
No, I don't doubt that. And all right, so. La Canfora back in November over at NFL.com believes the wide receiver figure will be $9.4 million, down from $11.4 million in 2011.
Wow. Okay.
So I mean, that's – I'm trying to think who – I guess like Reggie Wayne's coming off the books and Westwell. all these guys who are coming off the books are making it lower.
But, yeah, I'm surprised it's going lower. You don't see that very often at all.
And you got to remember the Chargers with Vincent Jackson don't get him at $9.4 million. They get him at 10% above $11.4 million because he was franchised last year.
Yes. So
I mean, that's almost untenable, I think. I mean, maybe not.
12 to 13 million. That's a good point you make. Yeah, there's a lot of money stuff that goes into this. It makes it very interesting.
Like if you're the Chargers, would you rather pay Vincent Jackson 12, you know, whatever it is, 12.5 million for 1 year, or maybe go invest in someone like Colston for, you know, 3 years? You know, just, I mean,
right. I ask Philip Rivers if he has a voice or an idea about it.
When did you see Rivers?
If I'm the Chargers, I see him every day.
I asked.
No, yeah, I would ask him. Like,
did you tell him? I said, hey.
I call. Hey, Phil.
Will
Phil Brent, Rivers. Yeah.
Will Brinson says, what?
I get what you're saying. This is why general managers are more than just football guys a lot of the time, or they have other guys around them too. And it's easy to sit here and go through a list and say, bring them back. But there are other guys on the team. I mean, it's everything's finite. So it'll be interesting to see. How do we get into this again? The Niners.
Niners needing
at least one of these guys.
And instead of going back to talk about the Niners, let's talk about two teams that are still alive. Here we are, we're 40 minutes into the podcast, and we haven't mentioned the Super Bowl, but we'll get out of that. There's a lot of time to talk about. There's a lot of time to talk about the Super Bowl, was my point. I read your storylines piece over at the New York Times. Very good stuff.
Thank you.
Yeah. Are you, you know, having known you for a while, I know that you're a guy who is probably already sick of the comparisons to 2007 and the like. How do you see this media week playing out? I think, to me, this is the best possible matchup as we headed into the championship games. Maybe the best possible matchup outside of Packers Patriots as we headed into the playoffs, because it's at Peyton's house, Eli and Brady, and I realize that this storyline will get beat to the ground repeatedly, and I realize that...
But they all will, so it's okay.
Exactly.
That was the point of my top 10 storylines we're going to get sick of, is that that doesn't mean they're bad storylines, we're just going to get sick of them, but that's because we get sick of Super Bowl coverage in a good way. It's
right. Like, see, this is, to me, this is better than, like, Harbaugh Bowl, which would be...
I agree. That's the one I would have had no patience for, because it's not that interesting after a while.
They've already played. I mean, it's cool that they're playing in a Super Bowl, but geez. I think it's fascinating that we got this matchup and that there is the revenge factor. There are 16 guys on the Patriots. I think Ryan Wilson looked it up. 16 guys on the Patriots and seven guys on the Giants that played in 2007.
Vice versa.
Is it seven on the Patriots?
Yeah, seven on the – I think there were eight, but one of them didn't play that season. So there were seven guys who were in the game. And then the Giants, I think there were 15 from that team, which is actually a lot if you think about it.
Yeah, I'm surprised given all the –
And who are the guys as well? Because it's not – I mean, if there were 15, most likely they were starters or they're critical guys now.
Right.
So,
it's like Eli, Tuck, Umanura, the offensive line. Mm-hmm. None of the wide receivers played, right?
No, because it's Nix and Cruz and Manningham came in the next year.
Yeah, who was the
Spartan, so none of them. The receivers back then, that was was Burris and Steve Smith and – Amani Toomer still around?
David Tyree.
Yeah, of course.
Totally different. It's fascinating to see the evolution. Those guys, it's a fairly similar group of wide receivers there, you know?
Talent-wise, you mean?
Style-wise. I mean, talent-wise, too. I mean, Nix is Plaxico.
I think this is a much tougher...
They're totally better.
Tougher to match up with, because Plaxico was a big possession guy. Nix can be that and more. Cruz is much tougher to defend than Amani Toomer was at that stage of his career, or Steve Smith.
I would say Cruz is Steve Smith because they're the slot guys, but Steve Smith caught more balls, although Cruz caught more this year, actually. I think Steve Smith maxed out like 117, but it's similar in that sense. And I think that Manningham and Toomer is probably a wash if Manningham's not better.
It's a similar Giants team. What I think really puts a stake in the whatever destroys the rematch angle of it is that New England's a very different team now. I mean, almost no comparison, and that's critical because the Giants beat New England style of play last time. They came in with Randy Moss and Wes Welker, and everything they did was about stretching the
field. They were the definition of vertical.
Exactly. It all set up from Randy Moss. And so that takes time to pass block. And the Giants countered that by blitzing inside, which kept the Patriots run. It kept them in max protection. For two, it forced the Patriots help blockers to go inside, which made one-on-one matchups on the edges. It was and you can't block Strahan and Umanura one-on-one. Most teams can't. The Patriots couldn't. And they were under pressure all game. It was a great game plan, a fun one to re-examine over the years, but it's not relevant now because New England has a whole different offense, and they're not going to be doing any more seven-step drops. And so the game to really look back on was the Week 9 game when these teams played up in I believe that was up in Foxborough, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was in
the
Foxborough.
Giants beat them.
It was, in fact, the only win for the Giants during a six-game stretch where they lost, where they played arguably the toughest schedule, toughest six-game stretch we saw all season. Probably.
Right. Saints, right. It was like their warm-up for this playoff stretch.
Yeah, exactly. It was fortuitous timing, even though they lost a bunch of them. But Packers, 49ers, Saints, Patriots, Cowboys twice, and the Jets.
Has any team ever had four playoff games on the road even, but just even four playoff games where they were all rematches? I believe the Giants have, right? In fact, you could argue that they've had four must-win games to get to this point. They had Dallas in Week 6 to 17.
No, you can't argue that. You can state that unequivocally.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, you will win that argument every time. So, yeah, you're right. You can state that. They had Dallas in the first game, and then they opened the playoffs. Who'd they play in the first? I'm blanking.
The Falcons.
First round. Okay, so that was not a rematch.
No, but I mean it was.
But then they had the Packers and the Niners.
Yeah.
So three out of four. Okay. Well, I guess it doesn't happen there.
But yeah,
a lot of rematches, not all rematches.
Because they didn't. Yeah, they didn't play the Falcons, did they?
No.
Okay.
Not during the regular season.
Okay. But yeah, they played, if you count the Cowboys as a playoff game.
Right, and it essentially was. That was a rematch for them.
Yeah. And then the one team that they hadn't played already, they beat the pants off of in the Falcons.
So do you think what do you think of the game in this matchup? Do you think they'll look at that week? Obviously, they'll look at the Week 9 tape, but how much of it do you think will be similar, their game plan wise?
A reasonable amount. I mean, they beat the Patriots. It's although, you know, the interesting thing about that game is that you wrote this. I was reading that this morning, actually, as I walked the dogs. But you were talking about in the Times, or I noticed that something that you wrote about the rematch is that you look at it and they didn't – like it. Everybody's like, God, that was an amazing game. What a shootout. But they didn't – there was like 0 points on the board through three quarters.
Oh, the Week 9 game, yeah, it was a defensive struggle.
Yeah.
I mean, both defenses played really well. And also, Tom Brady did not play well in that game. He did at the end. He became Tom Brady. But the first couple quarters, he didn't play well. And the Giants, I mean, give them some credit for that, but Brady also just was a little bit off. And I don't think that's something you can count on. I don't think you go into a game predicting Tom Brady's going to be off, even though it's happened a few times this year.
Happened against the Ravens. He was terrible.
Yeah, he was, although if you take out the mistakes.
He sucked.
Okay, yeah, you're right. Tom Brady said he sucked.
We did.
And so I just wonder how much of it the Giants can recreate. I mean, those tight ends, I watched the film again this week, and then I looked at my notes from that original film, and I had down there, like, Gronkowski can do this, this, and this. He's a good tight end. Because it was before Gronkowski.
It was before he broke out, yeah.
Right. It was actually right around the time you were pointing out to me he's a top 10 tight end. You just hadn't thought of it yet. I hadn't. And
right. And
so he's more. Aaron Hernandez is more than what he was. And Wes Welker is really the number three option now. The Giants' game plan last time was about containing Welker, which they did early. They did not do it late. So I think these are also different teams than when they last met. I mean, especially New York on their side of the ball, they
much
didn't
healthier.
Have Nicks.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, they didn't have Nicks or Bradshaw in that game. Their offensive line was different on the left side. Eli Manning, I think he was Eli Manning. I think he's even, obviously, he's better now, but that's a whole different offense without Nicks. And so New England couldn't cover them consistently back then. I don't think they have a prayer of doing it now.
No, I don't think so. In fact, I think that this matchup probably hinges on Vince Wilfork. You look at I mean, he was devastating against the Ravens, and that's what kept, you know, he limited the way that the Ravens could run the ball, and he got pressure on Joe Flacco. And I think that if he can do that against Eli Manning and help shut down Ahmad Bradshaw and Brandon Jacobs, which is certainly plausible, then it gives the Patriots a exponentially greater chance to win.
I agree, and I think that's almost their only – I mean, that defensive line, there aren't a lot of other guys. They've played well the last couple of weeks, but there aren't a lot of guys who are playmakers. Dederick maybe against the run sometimes. I mean, it's not a great vote of confidence.
Spikes is big to have back. He missed half the game. He's just in terms of being a run stopper and maybe making – he's had a nice stretch here at the end of the year.
Yeah, he was huge in their last meeting. He really stood out in the first half, and then he got hurt, and Gary Guyton came in. And Guyton actually did a decent job, but he didn't pop out on film the way Spikes does. And so Spikes can also – he can't cover Bradshaw out of the backfield, but he can cover Jacobs very well. A lot of guys can't, but he – I mean, he –
he's big enough to stop Jacobs.
Right. Yeah, exactly. He is. And then that's so, yeah, having him back helps. The Patriots are healthier in the secondary. They've gotten better since they put Sterling Moore at corner and moved McCourty to safety, but they're still not great. I mean, they can be exploited. And so if Wilfork doesn't get pressure like you suggest, I mean, it does come down to him, because if he doesn't, Manning has all day to throw. And he'll pick him apart.
And Hakeem Nicks will probably be able to get separation off Julian Edelman.
Yeah, you have to imagine he would. I couldn't believe that at the final series.
Why didn't they keep
Ravens
going to Bolton?
Well, they did, and eventually they took Edelman out. He started in, and they got in a hurry up, and they realized, okay, Edelman, I guess he really can't cover if they throw at him every down. And so they replaced him with Nate Jones, I believe it was. And that changed things a little bit. So I wonder why Nate Jones doesn't play ahead of Edelman already. I mean, how bad are you at cornerback if a slot receiver is playing ahead of it's not like they have no guys. When Troy Brown was playing nickel,
had nobody else.
Yeah, originally it was because there was no one there. That's not the case anymore, but Edelman's still getting snaps. That tells you they really don't like who they have at corner.
No, that's true. All right, well, we'll – let's get out of here before we get too long. But we'll be back next week. We'll be back all throughout next week for the Super Bowl. We head out there on Sunday. Wilson and I will be back on – I got Maurice Jones-Drew and Nick Mangold will be on the show later this week, I'm told.
That's a great lineup.
Yeah, I know. Pretty good. That's what we're planning on for later in the week, so everybody stay tuned to that. Subscribe via iTunes, and we'll get you out on this. Andy, over, under, number of times that David Tyree's name is mentioned in the next week.
And the next week.
I do that all the time. I said over under, and I didn't give you a number. So I'll set it at 4,352.
For every – over. I mean, for everybody. How about just by just by ESPN, CBS, and Fox Sports combined on their coverage?
Oh, I mean, 5 million.
I still say over.
Yeah, it'd be way over. You won't be able to escape David Tyree, and the word Manning – will be said every 24 seconds from Sunday to Sunday in Indianapolis. I think 24 seconds in between Mannings is max time you'll get free.
Right, and ironically, one in every 24 of those will be Manningham, but it'll still the register will still pick it up.
That's
and count
true.
It.
Yeah, and a lot of them will be Peyton, obviously. But yeah, all right, good stuff as always, and we'll be back soon. Subscribe to your iTunes, people.